This week on The Take, we're marking 1 year since a pair of devastating earthquakes hit Turkey and Syria with a new digital interactive. Listen and watch stories of survival, recovery, and coping with the grief at aljazeera.com/earthquakes. Again, that's aljazeera.com/earthquakes.
I'm in the North Indian town of Ayodhya. It's January, the start of an election year, where a grand ceremony that is as religious as it is political is underway. Prime Minister Narendra Modi is front and center at the opening, the grand opening of a temple to the Hindu god Ram. Now, not long ago, the presence of the Prime Minister at a mega religious event would have been seen as controversial, break from India's secular tradition. All the more because the temple is coming up on the ruins of a 400-year-old mosque demolished 3 decades ago by Hindu activists, sparking Hindu-Muslim riots across India. But the event today, marked by celebratory media coverage and these cheering crowds, embodies the dramatic shift for India from a secular nation to a majoritarian state. Modi Sarkar Zindabad.
In this episode of the India Report, I'll be examining the rise of Hindutva, the Hindu supremacist ideology espoused by Prime Minister Narendra Modi and his ruling BJP. We'll explore the factors that have propelled Hinduism to the center of India's national identity, but how it's also given rise to bigotry and sectarian violence. And more fundamentally, could India's Hindu revivalism ensure an election win and a third successive term for Narendra Modi?
Unusual scenes from an unusual time. The Prime Minister is the master of ceremonies at the opening of the Ram Temple. Fulfilling a long-running promise of his party.
Sadiyon ka abhutpurva dhairya, anginat balidan, tyag aur tapasya ke baad, hamare Prabhu Ram aa gaye.
On the streets, Ayodhya, once one of India's biggest religious flashpoints, wears the air of a carnival.
Walking through the streets of Ayodhya today, there is a little sign of its contentious past. For decades, this North Indian town was at the epicenter of a campaign by the Hindu right who wished to reclaim the birthplace of one of Hinduism's most prominent gods, Lord Ram. Hindutva activists believed that in the 16th century, Muslim invaders had torn down a temple that was built on Ram's birthplace and instead constructed a mosque as a sign of conquest.
A campaign led by a top BJP politician, L.K. Advani, culminated in the tearing down of the mosque in 1992, triggering widespread Hindu-Muslim riots in which 2,000 people were killed. That event, seen as delivering a crippling blow to India's constitutional ideals, proved to be a pivotal moment in the BJP's march to power.
You can see a complete trajectory of growth in parliament, in their numbers, in the electoral seats they won, the number of votes they polled. All of it is this process that started from the mobilization that led to the demolition to the final election of Modi in 2014.
The dispute between Hindus and Muslims over the plot of land in Ayodhya worked its way through the Indian justice system until it eventually landed in the Supreme Court. In 2019, the court ruled that the land belonged to the Hindus and that they could build a temple on it. However, it also said that the demolition of the mosque was an egregious violation of the rule of law and that a separate patch of land had to be allotted to Muslims to build a mosque. It was a significant victory for the Hindu right wing.
I'm proud to be a Hindu, and I said I'm very, very proud
And about the demolition?
No, I'm very, very proud that I participated in that movement. And ultimately, that disputed structure, it was a symbol of shame for us. It came down.
Uma Bharti is a firebrand of the Hindu right. She was once the BJP's chief minister of a prominent North Indian state and even served as a minister in the first Modi government. She was present when the mosque came down 3 decades ago.
But your own leaders, Umaji, Atal Bihari Vajpayee, who went on to become prime minister, said it was the saddest day of my life when the mosque came down. L.K. Advani, who read the Ram Temple movement, said the demolition was a terrible mistake.
No, actually what happened, those people believed that the BJP workers will be there and they will listen to us. They forgot that Ram is not a leader of BJP. Ram is God, treated by every Hindu. So,
but they are expressing regret. Saying it was a terrible mistake.
Yeah, because...
And you are saying you are proud.
No, what I am saying, I am definitely proud and I will continue to say it.
That pride in an unapologetic Hindu resurgence centered around an unabashed Hindu leader was on full display at the temple inauguration, with elections just months away, the perfect launch pad for Modi and the BJP's campaign.
Sunab, aake aapko yahan kaisa lag raha hai?
Bahut acha lag raha hai.
Acha lag raha hai.
Ji ji. Ab aap kya bakhan kare unko? Ati sundar hai. Bahut acha lag raha hai ekdam.
तो एक जो कहा जा रहा है कि ये सब एक तरह से राजनीतिक लाभ के लिए भाजपा कर रही है, मंदिर को जल्दी से खोल दिया, प्रधानमंत्री हर जगह उनका फोटो छप गया.
भाई हमारा दृष्टिकोण तो ऐसे नहीं है कि उसके लिए खोला है.
जो बोलते हैं वो राजनीति करते हैं.
I was seeing that a democratically elected prime minister is acting as a priest king, and I was seeing that how majoritarianism has won.
Asaduddin Owaisi is a member of parliament, one of a shrinking number of Muslim MPs in India, and an outspoken critic of the Hindu first turn in Indian politics.
What would you say to the argument the BJP makes that this is a matter of personal faith? This is the prime minister's own belief. This is not political.
Well, if no one is stopping you and me or the Prime Minister or anyone to practice their personal belief. But the whole world knows that this was a government function. Mr. Modi was there as the Prime Minister of the country, not as an individual Narendra Modi. He was there as the Prime Minister of the country, and we have seen how he hijacks all these such inaugurations. In fact, the foundation laying ceremony was done by him.
So you don't buy the BJP argument that this has got nothing to do with elections?
It has got everything to do with elections only, because Mr. Modi has achieved one or two objectives. One is that he has consolidated the Hindu vote. Secondly, he has shown the majority community that how Muslims are put in their place. And thirdly, he has told the majority community that you don't require a democratically elected prime minister, but you require a priest king.
Many are asking, why should the Prime Minister of a country which is governed by a secular constitution be such an active participant at the opening of a temple, to the point where he was actually doing prayers himself?
So it was not the government, it was the Narendra Modi, Damodar Das Narendra Modi, who was invited to be there. And we are secular in the true sense of secularism.
But Umaji, he was very much there as Prime Minister.
No, when the Prime Minister is around, the certain protocol is there, the protection is there.
India's Hindu-centric turn runs contrary to its founding vision. Nearly 7 decades ago, at the time of independence from the British, India's founders chose a secular path. It was a risky choice given that India was and is a deeply religious country with an 80% Hindu population.
That decision had a context. The subcontinent had witnessed a bloody partition into Hindu-majority India and Muslim-majority Pakistan. Foremost on the minds of India's founders, like India's first Prime Minister Jawaharlal Nehru and the man known as the father of the nation, freedom fighter Mahatma Gandhi, was the need to enshrine protections, not just for the millions of Muslims who chose to stay back in India, but also for the many other religious and linguistic minorities that made up the country.
We have different language groups. Europe doesn't have that kind of diversity of languages. If you look at whatever we mean by ethnicities, you look at religions, all major religions of the world represented here. And basically, a counterfactual is available in the fact that Pakistan was formed at the same time. And it was based and constructed out of the same ideas that the Hindu right is now implementing in India. So at that time, in terms of the religious strife, the madness, the violence of the millions who died in the clashes between religions at that point of time, this was by far the most sane option that was available. It was, I think, a choice that if you look across the post-colonial world of countries becoming independent, the sanest, the most humane choice that any country came up with.
For at least the first four decades after independence, a majority of India's Hindus seemed aligned to the secular ideals as framed in the constitution, despite periodic communal flare-ups. But then, the secular consensus began to unravel.
For many Indians, secularism was a Western concept imposed on a devout populace by India's ruling elite. In the decades after independence, the secular consensus came undone. The Hindu right began to gain ground, arguing that in the name of secularism, parties like Nehru's Congress was practicing appeasement by granting special favors to Muslims.
Secularism is the part of character of this country, part of character of Hindus. So secularism is very much part of this country. But there's a difference between the meaning of the secularism. Suddenly after the partition, the meaning of secularism became appeasing Muslims and suppressing Hindus.
A country and its polity is judged by how minorities are treated, and this ran contrary to the Hindu rights vision, which believed that this country was a Hindu country, that particularly Muslims and Christians did not have any basis or right to exist in this country. So they played on this idea of minority rights, a justifiable and necessary idea in any democracy, and they turned it into the idea of appeasement. And they had to work further on this, because if you look around, in some ways, our Muslim minority, about 12 to 15% of the Indian population, 200 million people, by itself a huge country in the world, if you just look at those numbers, is today being turned into second-class citizens. But this minority was never powerful in this country.
The right wing was able to build a mountain out of a molehill by pointing at a handful of Muslim-centric schemes as evidence of large-scale, state-endorsed favoritism towards Muslims. In reality, Muslims are amongst the poorest, most backward communities in India. Literacy rates are the lowest among India's Muslims compared to all religious communities. Muslims in rural India spend the least on consumption among all religious groups. Indian Muslims lag behind on salary, jobs and regular wages. Muslims are 14% of India's population, but records from 1999 to 2013 show they only form 3 to 4% of the police force. When I put this to Uma Bharti, she responded somewhat bizarrely by blaming supposed Muslim extremism for the community's backwardness.
But then how does that play into your argument that this is a community that has been appeased?
The Muslims are not able to get the good education. They can go to any institution to get the good education. But their mind and their focus is totally diverted. Because these people divert their mind all the time, keeping communal frenzy on their mind.
The opening of the Ram Temple in Ayodhya has turbocharged the Hindu rights campaign against two other ancient mosques. The Gyanvapi Mosque in Banaras, built, they say, on the site of an ancient temple devoted to the Hindu god Shiva, and the Shahi Eidgah Mosque in Mathura. built according to them near the birthplace of the Hindu god Krishna.
Isn't it deeply concerning for this country's Muslims if they find that one after another, structures which they consider sacred, there's now an attempt to bring them down, remove them, whatever the term one wants to use.
Isn't that something for a multi-faith country? Your question is...
Isn't that worrying for them?
Yeah, now your question is showing the disparity. I should not worry about it. I should not worry about Krishna and Shiva. It is the Muslim who should worry only. I have no right to worry. I have no right to cry. I have no right to worship there. See, you are doing the same thing.
I'm asking.
Your question is appeasing.
Not appeasing, I'm saying that...
It is a question of appeasement.
Under Indian law, the religious character of structures built before India became independent 7 decades ago cannot be altered. But not all in the ruling party are concerned with the law. One BJP MP warned that in a repeat of Ayodhya, a mosque in South India will be torn down. These incendiary comments by high-ranking members of the BJP, routinely aired by the media, are not isolated.
Hindu rashtra, Hindu rashtra, secular, secular,
secular,
kaise secular,
oh secular.
Koi Islamic desh nahi, ye mera Bharat desh hai, aur aane wale samay mein ye mera Bharat desh akhand rashtra banega.
Aur ye desh Hindu ka desh hai, aur ye desh Hindu ka rahega.
Comments like these have been made by regional lawmakers and even a chief minister of a state in India, all of them members of the BJP. We kept track of every publicly recorded instance of hate speech, not just anti-Muslim, but also statements that discriminated against India's marginalized communities, as well as calls to violence. We compared the 5 years before Modi came to power to the decade during which he was Prime Minister. We found hate speech had risen tenfold in the Modi years. BJP leaders were responsible for 81% of hateful comments. Given the unchecked proliferation of hate speech, it comes as no surprise that bigotry has even entered India's parliament. In 2023, a Muslim MP was targeted with a barrage of Islamophobic slurs. The recording of the incident only shows the abusive MP, a BJP parliamentarian, not his victim. Even by the standards of Indian Parliament, where the use of rough language is not unusual, this level of bigoted abuse was unprecedented. When we brought this up with Uma Bharti, her response was to bring up the time an opposition leader, Rahul Gandhi, supposedly called the Prime Minister a suit-wearing thief or chore.
Even in Parliament, he was called suited-booted chore.
No, I'm saying in Parliament, a Muslim MP, Danish Ali, is abused by a BJP MP. Who calls him a terrorist?
We condemned.
Who calls him?
Yeah, we all condemned. But Congress did not condemn Rahul Gandhi when he said suited booted chore to Modi.
Except Rahul Gandhi never mentioned the Prime Minister. His reference was to white collar crime, and he criticized the Modi government for legislation that he said favored corporate interests at the cost of public good. While BJP functionaries invoked the soundbite from Rahul Gandhi when questioned about bigoted language by members of their party, the reality is that for India's minorities, especially Muslims, the spike in hate speech has been devastating, from bullying and harassment to outright violence. Even Owaisi, an MP, is not safe. He has faced multiple attacks by Hindu vigilantes, including at his official home in Delhi's high security zone.
Then they came over here, did a Facebook live and started throwing stones. Threw stones, damaged my, some vessels were there. They damaged it.
The anti-Muslim tilt is even being baked into law. The Modi government has passed a sweeping range of legislation seen as biased against minorities, from removing special status to Kashmir, India's only Muslim-majority province, to a new citizenship law
that discriminates against Muslims.
We are talking of certain amendments to property rights in states like Gujarat, where you are ensuring that Muslims cannot buy property in Hindu neighborhoods, or Hindu neighborhoods have right to decide who will live there, who will not. There are love jihad laws which exercise great amount of state control over who can marry whom, under what circumstances they can marry. We have anti-conversion laws which have made it almost impossible for people to exercise their freedom of choice as far as their religion goes, again directed towards Muslims and Christians in some senses. So clearly, even these laws in the guise of making all equal citizens are actually designed to ensure that Muslims are further made subservient in a political process where they are today not participants.
India's aggressive Hindu majoritarianism has led some to question the fundamentals of the Hindu faith itself. How does Hinduism, one of the world's oldest religions and known to embrace all differences, reconcile with the virulently exclusionary ideology of Hindutva? Hindutva has given Hinduism a bad name. It's not something that excludes...
No, they are not separated. It's like fragrance in flower. It's like sweetness in the sugar.
But if you see what V.D. Savarkar, who is the Hindu nationalist leader who first popularized the term Hindutva in the 1920s, he defined it in exclusionary terms. He said that the essentials of Hindutva are a common nation, a common race and a common civilization. And he outlines how Muslims and Christians could never be considered Hindus because their holy land is in far off Arabia or Palestine.
When you are talking about Savarkar, we are sitting in 2024. When Savarkar said it, that was a different time.
You still think that there's something about Hinduism which is tolerant and which is worth celebrating and preserving?
Was Gandhi a follower of Hindutva or Hinduism? No, he was a follower of Hinduism. Look at all these people who sat and gave us this constitution. Ambedkar was a Buddhist, right?
Later you're on, saying the Gandhian model of Hinduism, because Gandhi.
No, I'm not saying the Gandhian. I'm saying the Hinduism is completely different.
Okay.
From the Hindutva ideology.
The distinction between Hinduism, the religion, and Hindutva, the political ideology, was embodied by Mahatma Gandhi. He espoused a more inclusive Hinduism, for instance, reciting interfaith prayers at his public gatherings. On the global stage, the BJP embraces Gandhi. At home, though, things have taken a darker turn. In recent years, more than one BJP lawmaker has voiced their admiration for Nathuram Godse, the Hindu chauvinist who assassinated Gandhi.
Nathuram Godse deshbhakt the, hain aur rahenge. Aisa bolne unko atankvadi kehne wale log swayam ke girevan mein jhaank ke dekhein. Ab ki chunav mein aise logon ko jawab de diya jayega.
Wo to rashtravadi hai hi. Main ye manti hu ki koi vyakti jeevan bhar desh ki chinta karta rahe.
Some say that this is not Gandhi's BJP, this is Godse's BJP. That this is the BJP.
No, now you are abusing. Now, Srinivasan, you are abusing my country, abusing me, and you are abusing my party. I'm sorry.
No, no, because there are people in your party who praised. No, no, I'm saying people in the BJP who praised Godse. Pragya Thakur, a BJP MP, said Godse was a patriot.
I'm telling you,
Usha Thakur, a BJP MLA, says Godse was a nationalist. So I am not abusing. These are people in the BJP.
Yeah, but there are people who said the Prime Minister is a suited booted chor. He should be eliminated.
In election season, the political gains of the BJP's unapologetic embrace of Hindutva are evident. At the Ram Temple opening, devotees even compared Modi to Hindu gods.
आप कह रहे हैं कि राम की आत्मा आपको लग रही है मोदी जी में है
बिल्कुल है बिल्कुल है बिल्कुल है उनका आशीर्वाद है
वो विष्णु भगवान के अवतार हैं
As India goes to vote, it is safe to assume that Narendra Modi is headed for a third term. Go by the evidence and there's little to suggest
that another term in power is likely to mellow the hardline impulses of the Hindu nationalist cause that Modi spearheads. The BJP's center staging of the Ram temple issue in their campaign is only further evidence that under Modi 3.0, the acceleration of India as a Hindu nation will only intensify, severely testing India's famed diversity.